Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Can your savings weather an economic storm? There are very few physical assets you can invest in that are proven to stand the test of time. Gold has withstood as a valued form of money for millennia, and Birch Gold lets you convert a retirement account into a tax-sheltered IRA and physical gold that doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. Text COAST to 989898 and claim your free info kit on gold. Text COAST to 989898 and secure your savings today.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, one of our favorite guests back with us, Seth Shostak, directing the search for extraterrestrials at the SETI Institute in California, trying to find evidence of intelligent life in space. He is also committed to getting to the public, especially young people, excited about astrobiology and science in general. A couple of his books include Life in the Universe, Confessions of an Alien Hunter, Cosmic Company, Sharing the Universe, Perspectives on Extraterrestrial Life. Seth, welcome back. How are you?
Just fine, George, and it's great to talk with you again. It's been a long time.
My God, but how many years have we been doing this now?
Well, that I'm not so sure of, but I think one of the first times I spoke to you, I was down at the Arecibo Radio Observatory, using the big dish there to try and eavesdrop on E.T., and my gosh, that's at least 20 years ago.
At least. I was doing my local show in St. Louis at the time.
That's right. That's right.
So that would have probably made it around 96, 97.
Yeah, that could be. I was around. It shocks me to say that when I think of how long ago it was.
Is Arecibo functioning at all anymore?
Well, I don't know that they're using it. I honestly, that's a very good question for which I have, alas, no answer. But, anybody can do a quick search to see if they are. They had problems because, the part of the dish collapsed and so forth. And the problem was to fix it. Well, let me back up a moment. A piece of the antenna actually came loose and it dropped through the reflecting dish underneath, creating a big hole and a lot of damage. And the estimate was that it was going to cost, many millions of dollars to fix that. And, okay, many millions is not so much, but, many of the people involved figured, look, instead of spending that money fixing Arecibo, why don't we use that money to build something else?
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen.
Tell us about the late Frank Drake and how this all started.
Yeah, Frank Drake, whom I usually refer to as the world's last nice guy. Unfortunately, he's gone now, so, there are no more nice guys, I guess. But he was a guy who actually had studied radio astronomy at Harvard, and he got a postdoc position at the National Radio Astronomy Observatory in Greenbank, West Virginia. Okay, that's a lot of words. But it was an observatory that had a lot of big antennas and some new ones. And the director of the observatory, a guy by the name of Otto Struve, Yeah, he met this guy, Frank Drake, the new kid. He was 29, 30 years old, something like that. And he said, look, here are some new antennas. Think of something to do with them. And Frank, who was, you know, a very smart guy, he thought instead of using it to study galaxies or gas in the Milky Way or stuff like that, he thought, why don't I try and eavesdrop on signals that maybe aliens are broadcasting? And that was the start of the whole SETI discipline. It began with Frank Drake. That was back in 1960.
And since the beginning of SETI, have you heard strange anomaly signals?
We hear signals all the time, George. I wish I could tell you that we heard a signal that, you know, looked like it might be what we're really looking for, which is, of course, a signal broadcast by some aliens. But we have not. And, you know, what can you say about that? One, maybe it just means there aren't any aliens. I don't believe that. I don't think you believe that. I don't think anybody believes that. The other possibility, of course, is you're not pointing the antenna in the right direction. You're not tuned to the right frequency. You know, maybe you don't have enough sensitivity. There are lots of ways. There could be, you know, plenty of radio traffic in space, but you could still miss it. So that kind of an experiment continues today. We continue to hope to find a signal that would tell us essentially overnight that we're not alone.
What are the possibilities, Seth, that their technology is way advanced and they don't even use the kind of technology we still use to pick up these signals?
Yeah, I mean, that's a legitimate point. And actually, I've heard it from a lot of people. You guys, you know, you're looking for radio signals. Well, radio, I mean, come on, the aliens are way beyond all that. Well, you know, this may be comforting to you being in the radio business, but radio will never be obsolete because it's just a good way to send information from one place to another, particularly if you're talking about one place in the cosmos to another place in the cosmos. So, you know, there's always going to be radio. I mean, it doesn't mean it has the same use. Maybe they're not broadcasting top 40 or anything like that, but radio will always be used. And, you know, that's what we look for, because radio signals just go right through space. They're unhindered by the fact that there's a lot of gas and dust between the stars.
How does the universe make sounds anyway, Seth?
Well, the universe doesn't make terribly many sounds. I mean, you know, you can go out into space and take off your spacesuit if you really want to do that and take a listen. You won't hear much. But there are things that do make sounds, actually. Some of the activity, for instance, on the sun, these big flares and so forth, they undoubtedly make some audio, but you'd have to be very close to the sun to hear them. Remember, you only hear things, you know, in your daily life, because we've got an atmosphere on Earth, and the atmosphere, you know, the air actually allows sound waves to go through it. So, you know, it conducts the sound from wherever it's being made to your ear. So somebody honks their car behind you, and, you know, that sound wave goes through the air between that car and you. But in space, there's not too much air, so they could honk and you wouldn't hear them.
Instead of using any kind of new technology these days?
Well, I mean, there's always, I don't know that there's any radically new technology, but there are always new technological approaches. One of the things, I mean, we could even talk about it, but that's being tried is to kind of piggyback on other kinds of radio observations of the sky, right? The sky is often being studied in the radio part of the spectrum because you can learn a lot about things like quasars, pulsars, even planets and things like that. They all make some sort of natural radio emission. But you could also, you know, tap off a bit of that signal and analyze it and see if there are any signals in there that are not made by nature, but are made by, you know, ET. So that is being done.
Now, tell us about artificial intelligence and how SETI is using that.
Yeah, well, artificial intelligence, I mean, I kind of figured that the aliens will be examples of artificial intelligence. I think we've talked about this in the past, but I occasionally get asked, you know, well, what do you think the aliens will look like? You know, they're going to be short little green guys or whatever. Hairless, you know, no clothes, no names, that kind of thing. Well, actually, when you think about, you know, what might replace Homo sapiens on this planet, not next week, but say 100,000 years from now, Will we still be the same species we are now, or will we have invented machines that are better than we are? We upload everything we know to the machines, and they essentially take our place on this planet. I don't know if you like that idea. I'm not sure I like that idea, but it might happen. And you can assume that the kind of aliens you might overhear have already done that. So maybe what you'll actually hear is not little soft, squishy guys, but machines.
I've always thought that the reports of extraterrestrials that people think they see on this planet might be robots as well. Is that possible?
Well, it's possible. I mean, you know, we use robots a lot. I mean, when I say robots, most people think of the sort of humanoid-looking robots, the kind of things that might, I don't know, change the tire on your car if they were good at that, which I think in general they're not. But, you know, we think of the robots that kind of look like us, but actually most of the robots don't look anything like us. They're the kind of robots that put together your car, for example, right? They're very specialized kinds of robots. And, you know, one of the big advantages of robots is that they don't insist on, for example, round-trip tickets if you send them into space. You can send them on a one-way ticket, and you won't get any complaints.
And they don't eat. They don't drink water. We don't have to worry about that.
Exactly. You don't need all that life support stuff. So, you know, there are probably a lot of robots around, and it could be that if we actually encounter the aliens, well, just as you say, we may, in fact, just encounter their hardware.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Can your savings weather an economic storm? Think about what you've put away for the future. Inflation can render cash worthless. Real estate can crash like in 2008. Economies built on a mountain of debt can fall like a house of cards. And there are very few physical assets you can invest in that can stand the test of time. Gold has withstood as a valued form of money for millennia. It's why people are flocking to it now and why Birch Gold is busier than ever. Through a little-known tax loophole, Birch Gold can let you convert a retirement account into a tax-sheltered IRA and physical gold, and the best part, it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket to make that change. To learn more, text COAST to 989898 and claim your free info kit on gold. Let me ask you this again. Can your IRA or 401k weather an economic storm? If not, call the people I trust, Birch Gold. Text COAST to 989898 and secure your savings today.
Hey girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
How did you get interested in all this, Seth? You're an astronomer by trade, right?
Yeah, I am. I am. Well, it was because, you know, when I was a kid, which was back before the Crimean War, when I was a kid, I was very interested in astronomy, you know. I had picked up some books and so forth. And then eventually, by the age of 10, I built some sort of telescope, that kind of thing. So I was interested in that. But I was also interested in aliens, George. And that's because on the weekends, I went to see these sci-fi films they were making back then, the kind of cheesy sci-fi films. But they very often had aliens in them, right, because you needed a bad guy. And the big advantage of using aliens as bad guys is that nobody will complain, right? Nobody's going to defend the aliens. So they would be pretty bad. They would just, you know, sort of try and flatten Earth and kill everybody and that kind of thing. So I, got interested in aliens that way.
I'm going to throw out an old movie that my dad took me to, and I guarantee it, I'll bet money that you know the title when I say it. The Mysterians.
I don't know it.
It was a Japanese movie of ETs coming here doing exactly what you said to try to eliminate us. But the movie was called The Mysterians, and he brought me to it. I must have been about 6 or 7 years old. It scared the living daylights out of me.
Yeah, I had the same kind of a reaction to these films. They mostly scared me, and yet I insisted on going. In fact, if I saw one of these films that night, you know, at home, I would be vomiting all night. I was really sick. I was so scared. And, I mean, you know, 2 weeks later, there'd be another film, and I'd want to go to it, and my mother would say, look, why do you want to go see that film? It's only going to make you sick. And I said, well, look, Mom, I just have to see these things. So I went.
If we do get a message from outer space, would it be a message that might have been sent to us directly, or do you think it was some kind of old broadcast from the universe from a long time ago?
Yeah, well, of course, you can't say until you pick up, you know, the signal. My guess is that we're more likely to find a signal that was not intended for us, right? Because if they wanted to send a signal to us directly, you know, attention all humans, you know, we wanted to tell you this, or maybe we want to sell you something or whatever, they would need to know about us. And it's not so easy to know about Homo sapiens if you're a bunch of aliens on a planet that's 100 light years away, right? You're not going to know. So I think it's more likely, but this is just a guess, of course, more likely that we'll pick up a signal that's, you know, just sort of radio traffic for whatever purpose the aliens have for that kind of communication. And that means we probably won't understand it. But on the other hand, we'd at least know somebody's out there.
With Seth Shostak from the SETI Institute, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Seth, tell us about the WOW signal. When did that pop up, and what was that?
Yeah, the WOW signal, I've kind of forgotten when it was. I think it was in the 1970s, but in any case, it was picked up by a big antenna in the Midwest. You know about the Midwest, George.
Oh, yeah, that's where I am right now.
Are you really? Oh, okay. Yeah, this was picked up, I think, at Ohio State. They had a big antenna. It's gone now, but they used it for radio astronomy. But they also, you know, would just use it to scan the whole sky, or as much of the sky as you could see from Ohio, and, you know, trying to pick up a signal that would tell us that somebody out there has a transmitter. And the output of this antenna and the receivers and all that stuff was directed to what was called a line printer. And there are undoubtedly people in the audience who remember line printers. That's the way you got output from your computer. You don't do that very much anymore, but it was just this big, very expensive printer that could print, you know, 100 lines a minute or maybe 1,000. And, you know, it would just print out numbers, and that was, you know, what was coming out of the computer. In any case, there was a guy that worked there, a guy by the name of Jerry Amon, and he would come in every couple of days to this little shack next to the antenna where this big printer was, you know, printing out the whatever signals were coming into that thing. And, you know, in general, it was just noise. I mean, it wasn't anything terribly interesting. But one day he came in and it was this big signal. And he wrote WOW next to it. And so ever after, it was called the WOW signal. The sad thing is that maybe that was ET, but nobody was ever able to find that WOW signal again. It was never seen a second time. And I got to tell you, that's kind of like seeing a ghost in your attic, right? But only once.
Yeah. You know, for radio stations, if you're on a 50,000 watts AM station, you go a little farther than you would if you're on a different wattage station. In radio waves that go off into space, whether we send them or they come to us, do they ever die off or just simply run out of energy and they just stop moving?
Yeah, they don't take vacations, and they don't really die off. What happens is they just get weaker with distance, right? It's like, I don't know, if you could go up to the moon with a flashlight and just aim that flashlight at the sky and, you know, turn it on, whatever, that beam of light, you know, if you're fairly close to it, you can easily see it. But as you get farther and farther away from it, of course, the light becomes dimmer. And it's the same with radio waves and, you know, all the stuff. They never stop. It isn't that they sort of give up the ghost after traveling a million miles, but they are possibly so weak that you couldn't, you know, really pick them up with any kind of equipment that we have.
And is a radio wave traveling at the speed of light, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Radio wave is just another form of light.
That's intriguing. It really is. Since we began broadcasting in this country, in this world, our signals could be millions of trillions of miles out there by now.
Well, yeah, they're moving at the speed of light, so that's about 186,000 miles a second. So every second, the signals are that much farther out into space. And that means that, you know, early television broadcasts, for example, beginning in the late 1940s and the 1950s, those signals are like 60, 70 light years out. That's a long distance. A light year is like 6 trillion miles. So, you know, it's like 60 times that. And that means that those signals have actually reached undoubtedly many planets in our galaxy. Now, whether anybody's watching that stuff, I mean, obviously we don't know. Nobody's complained about the the programming yet, but maybe they will eventually.
Maybe they'll call in one day on the show, huh?
They might do that, yes.
Is the Orson Welles War of the Worlds type program a possibility that the wrong type of ETs could show up?
Well, I have to say, George, I'm a big fan of the War of the Worlds, in particular the movie. There was a movie made in 1953.
Yeah.
War of the Worlds. And, you know, the aliens come down and they use their machines to flatten Los Angeles. Yeah, flat in Los Angeles, right? And, of course, I wasn't living in Los Angeles at the time, but when I saw this on the screen, I thought, well, I mean, it's only Los Angeles, right? It isn't that they've done anything really terrible like flattening Trenton, New Jersey or something like that. But, in fact, you know, that idea was based on events that were actually happening on Earth that, you know, Welles converted to this format in which, you know, he packaged this story in terms of a battle between societies that are on different planets and so forth. But the whole premise that aliens might want to flatten, you know, Los Angeles and everything else here on Earth, I mean, nobody knows what they find interesting to do. But it's not clear to me why they would want to do that, because what's in it for them? I mean, you know, they go out and flatten Earth. Well, you know, how do they benefit from that? I think they would probably find it more interesting to try and establish some sort of communication with us.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.